You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Get the McButtsex! Selling, it's like right next to the BTS meal. In fact, some people confuse the two.
Just a quick content warning that since this episode is about Dear Evan Hansen, we discuss themes like suicide and sexual assault throughout this episode. Hello, and welcome to the Too Much Exposition podcast. I'm your co-host, Gabriella Day. Joining me, your co-host, Brendan Henderson, and special guest, Jess McAnally.
That's me.
Just convinced that the two of you are clones of one another, so it's really weird speaking with you both.
There's a running gag on our show that he's my evil twin.
Well, you know, I never really noticed it until I see the videos next to each other, because when we record this, we do it with like a video chat, which no one else can see. I'm naked right now.
But I mean, Jess is here, of course you're naked.
I mean, I'm naked too. What we're doing after this, we didn't change our plans.
Tell me, dear listener, are you naked? If not, get naked for a very naked edition of Too Much Exposition.
I can confirm that Brent is naked when he listens to musicals with cheese. He has told us that.
This is an episode about a teen-related musical. Please keep your clothes on to avoid any lawsuits.
A teen-related musical starring a dude who looks like he's 45.
So we're just tell the people who you are. For the love of God, can we focus for a moment?
No, not when it's
this is the theater podcast about nothing.
If it was one of us, it would be fine, but
this is going to be a challenge.
Yes, it's like crawling children into like a little playpen. I host a podcast called Musicals with Cheese. Probably no one's ever heard of it. It's not very well known. It's this really, really dumb podcast where I try to convince my friend to like musical theater. I know you think it sounds like that other one you're thinking of. It's not that one. We came first. But our gimmick is that we make them, like, I make him figure out a cheese that would go along with that musical because, you know, we're dumb. Brendan's guested a couple times. He can confirm. Very dumb show.
I'll never forget the first episode that we did, and it was just off the rails from probably minute two. So
can I just already give Dear Evan Hansen can I rate it like cheddar cheese or American cheese, because it's just basic.
Wow,
is that where we're going? You're bringing in the hot takes at minute four.
I'm bringing in the takes at
thanks everybody for listening. That's the end of the episode. Shortest episode.
Thank you. We've reached
ever.
The cheese rating. We've made it. We're done. Yep. Goodbye.
You know, I will say there wasn't much exposition in that. I'm a little disappointed.
I think we called the podcast Too Much Exposition because we can never get to the fucking point.
That's actually pretty good. We should change the tagline. A podcast where we can't get to the fucking point.
It's not the podcast about nothing. Can't.
Now a part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Yeah. Can't get to the fucking point.
But Jesse, I needed to ask you. So how did you start Musicals with Cheese? How did you just decide, hey, I want to do this?
It has been a premise that I had sat on for like 4 years before I actually did it, and it had a couple variations where it wasn't Andrew, where it was like other people, where I was like, this is a good enough premise where I think I could have fun doing it, and I haven't seen it before. And then I kept pitching it to other people, and they didn't do it. And
so Andrew was your rebound guy. That's what
he was not my rebound guy. He was always my ideal pick, but he's always a very busy dude. So I sat him down, and we watched the 2016 Tonys with Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, no.
And every time, after every performance, he would just say, like, this is so cheesy. I'd give that one Swiss.
Oh, my God.
After every performance. And I was like, that's so fucking brilliant. That's, that like, enough to base a podcast off of.
You're like, well, this was and a stupid just afternoon we had. Let's turn it into a podcast.
And it was literally just like that, where I'm like, there's a title, there's a premise, there's a rating system. Like, that's more than most people have by episode. Episode one,
right.
And so we rolled that out. It started off as YouTube videos, which we're now kind of bringing back, before it became the audio format, and now we've done it for like 100 or 150-ish episodes, and we haven't missed a week since we started, which that's I will say is incredible. One of our few crowning achievements.
That's crazy. You know, Jess, this is only our third episode of Too Much Exposition, and we're considering quitting. It's just, you know, Brendan and I have such a volatile relationship. We just, I don't know if this is
you too.
This is news to me.
Have one with him too?
Oh, no.
I'm just so oblivious. I'm like, everything's great. Everything's fine. I didn't know we were quitting. I just show up next week and it's just me.
It's like, just hey, you. I'll just let you record into the void.
What's new?
Okay, so we're going to talk about Dear Evan Hansen for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
I think the particular reason is that we're doing a focus on the Wait in the Wings YouTube channel about the Broadway renaissance that was happening on Broadway right before it shut down, and we will see if it continues when Broadway reopens, so who's to say?
Mrs. Doubtfire the musical is going to bring it back. I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah, but
it's going to be that one.
Who's to say you're wrong? And Dear Evan Hansen, I think, is a very important puzzle piece into that Broadway renaissance, so I wanted to discuss it for that reasons, but also, spoiler alert, Jess, I know you hate Dear Evan Hansen a lot, and Brendan, you also have feelings, and I'm pretty neutral on this topic. But before we get into it, what do you know about this musical? Does someone want to intro it, or do you want me to intro
that's gotta
it
be,
and make it
that's,
concise?
I want to do like what you've done the last 2 weeks. But we're gonna do it with Jess, as our first guest. You get this privilege of, I want you to recap Dear Evan Hansen in what was it, 30 seconds?
And I gave you 45 seconds for Hadestown.
45 seconds.
45 so, seconds. I could do. Okay. I can do 45. I might have some time.
Okay, Brendan, you'll have a timer. Jess, can you explain to us the plot of Dear Evan Hansen in 45 seconds?
Are you gonna give me a countdown, or do I just start?
Yeah, we'll go 3, 2, 1, bash.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, bash.
This motherfucker, Evan Hansen, is up here, and he's just like, man, I'm so sad. I got this broken-ass arm. His mom's like, yo, your therapist said you haven't been writing these goddamn letters. You better go to school and write this on a Word document computer at school and make sure that you have this letter written. So he goes to school, gets beaten up by this kid named Connor, who he's also thirsting after the sister of, and then he's like, man, it hasn't been that good a day after all. He writes his letter to himself like, man, today sucks. And also, this girl's so fucking hot.
10 seconds.
And then the brother comes in, Connor, and he's like, motherfucker, he kills himself, shit goes wrong, and then everything falls apart. He lies a lot because he's a lying motherfucker. I hope that Dear Evan Hansen fails when it becomes a movie, because people need to know this is problematic as hell.
That's time.
Bravo. That was something. How many seconds did that take, Brendan?
That took 45 seconds, 0.64, so right on it. It's always so funny with this timing thing, because it's like really detailed for the first 30 seconds.
Yes.
And then that last 10 seconds. So we got like a really good rundown of act one, and then it's just like what act two.
And then the rest happens. That's too much exposition for you.
The thing is, it is more accurate than the playbill description of Dear Evan Hansen, which is, a boy gets caught in a whirlwind event when a tragedy strikes and it changes his life forever.
I love like, that you have that memorized. I just... You, Jess, are exactly... You're like the girl who's like, oh my god, like, I hate that guy. Like, he's so annoying and you're secretly in love with him. I feel like you're just secretly in love with Dear Evan Hansen. That's the situation.
I wish I was, because at least then I could actually have some kind of feeling that wasn't just bile and hatred toward it.
And also, you've talked about this so many times in podcast form before, so thank you for talking
about
it once again with us.
The thing is, when my podcast, I'm mostly trying to goad Andrew into saying funny things, and here I can actually just have an opinion, so this is fun.
I feel like your relationship with Dear Evan Hansen is a lot like my relationship with The Last Jedi, which is where you really like want to understand it, but you just can't.
You haven't even seen the movie since theater, so
I've watched
Dear Evan Hansen within the last week.
I watched it on Netflix, and I got like 20 minutes in, and then I was like, yeah, I can't.
Oh, so you can't even make it through.
I can't do it again.
Okay, actual Dear Evan Hansen. It opened on Broadway in December 2016 after tryouts in Washington, D.C. and off-Broadway. It was nominated for 9 Tony Awards, and it won 6 of them, including Best Musical, which we will talk about. Ben Platt originated the role of Evan Hansen and left the show 11 months after its opening on Broadway. Following him were
Nepotism
actors...
Daddy.
Noah Galvin, Taylor Trench, Andrew Barth Feldman, Jordan Fisher, who will be coming back as Dear Evan Hansen when it reopens.
As Dear Evan Hansen.
Imagine that's just as a three dear. Name, like Andrew Barth Feldman. My name is Dear Evan Hansen.
My name is Dear is actually, that's actually his first name. Is that?
What video is that? That, like, have you ever seen that video where he's like, yeah, and Ben Platt, who plays Dear, just does a great job with
that's
it.
That's right. I just did
this. Did this?
I was just going to cut out my mistake, but now we have to leave it in. Now it's a
yay! And that's how I mess up every podcast I'm on.
The film adaptation is set to premiere this fall, 2021. Ben Platt will be reprising his role as Deer, and it will be directed by Stephen Chbosky, who wrote Perks of Being a Wallflower and also directed that movie. So I have feelings about him. Boys, are you ready for some trivia?
My God.
Cracking. Are you ready for
some
trivia?
She's actually been up since like 9 a.m., but she's just been chain smoking out back. Just like, God, I have to deal with this.
Gabby, can you do that again? But I need a little bit more rasp in your voice.
Are you ready for some trivia?
Oh my God.
We need a good medium between
those. Are you
two.
Ready for some trivia?
Perfect!
That,
we got
that
it!
That was the worst one.
That's a wrap!
No, I'm trying really hard to hide my hangover voice, but I can talk down here if you guys want me to, because this is just where I'm the most comfortable.
Yeah, let's get into some
I literally spent this entire podcast screaming, and I'm like, why does my voice hurt after
why
a new podcast?
Voice hurt?
We're not even that
right.
far in yet, people.
Jess and Brendan, can you name all the shows that were also nominated for Best Musical Tony, the Best Musical Tony in 2017?
Is this like a tag team where I get one, then he gets one, then or should we just
you guys
both
can
answer?
Compete against one another, or you can work together?
See, it's
I
really...
think working together would be funnier because I'm pretty sure I know them all, and that's less fun. So
I'm surprised.
I'll go first.
Okay, excellent.
Great comment of 1812. That's the first one.
That's one.
I should have won.
Ding, ding, ding.
Come From Away.
Come From Away. Ding, ding, ding. There's two more. Well, technically one more.
Bandstand.
No.
Was it Groundhog Day?
Yes, it was Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. And then Dear Evan Hansen.
And then Dear Evan Hansen.
Did Bandstand really not get nominated?
Nah.
Not that year. I don't know if it was a different year, but it definitely wasn't that year.
No,
that
I just
thought,
same,
I thought it was that year.
That was the same year, but it didn't get it got, yeah.
Are you fucking
kidding?
Surprising? I'm sorry. I'm just post-emptively angry about that now. I know they played that Tony's because Andrew was like actually enjoying himself.
Nope. That was against Come From Away, Great Comet of 1812, and Groundhog Day, which I just, how Dear Evan Hansen won over Come From Away or 1812 is just beyond me. I mean,
like,
I should
really
be saying Groundhog Day because I'm a part of my brand, I guess, is being an Andy Carl stan.
Andy Carl stan.
Well, how do you feel about Ben Platt beating Andy Carl?
There we go. Is that maybe Andy Carl's in the movie? Maybe Andy Carl could play Connor's dad. We have to refilm it. Who do we talk
no,
to?
No, he should just play. He should play Deer. He should play Deer.
Should play
the role
Deer.
Deer and Dear Evan Hansen.
I mean, he might as well. I mean, he kind of
should
fits
just
the
play.
Range, does he not?
He should just play Phil Connors, trapped in the Dear Evan Hansen universe.
Okay.
And he just keeps reliving
the
letter every day.
What is Connor's sister's name? Zoe, Chloe, Cynthia, or Heidi?
Zoe.
He hates the show so much and he knows it so much. Okay. Question for you. Which one of these characters in Dear Evan Hansen is queer? Is it A, Evan Hansen, B, Connor Murphy, C, Alana Beck, or D, Jared Kleinman?
Depends on some shit. Because I'm pretty sure in the movie they're gonna say retcon Connor to be gay. Yeah, and they're also I'm pretty sure they're gonna make Jared gay as well. Yeah, those are the representation crowbars that they're doing.
Anyways, the correct answer was E. None of them. None of these characters are queer.
Oh, that's
no,
what I was thinking. Was I didn't think that that was
actually queer.
But the internet thinks that Evan Hansen is.
Okay,
yes.
So right as soon as the movie trailer dropped, I feel like the discourse on Twitter was everybody being like, oh yeah, guys, Evan Hansen is not like the gay little love story that you thought it was. I don't know why people thought that it was that. It's like, I don't really listen
for
to
forever.
Be More Chill, but if you listen to Michael in the Bathroom, I feel like you can tell 15 seconds into that song that it's hella gay, right? And Dear Evan Hansen just does not have those same vibes. This musical is super hetero, bro.
It has the no homo song, but not because we're gay. No, not because we're gay. No, we're friends, but in a way, the only man that I love is my dad.
He did it.
But anyway!
Jess loves this musical. That's what I'm leaving.
I hate this musical
Jess
so much. I just
loves this musical is what I'm
No, it's
with.
Just that if you are going to hate on something, you have to know your shit and have your facts ready so that if people are going to be like, well, you didn't really understand. I'm like, motherfucker, I bet I can win a trivia contest against you on this.
You did. You guys did pretty well. My last trivia question was, what is the plot? But we already did that, so it's fine. Don't worry. It's fine. Again, before we get into the very negative aspects of probably what is about to come, I think Dear Evan Hansen as a musical is important in its role in history because it really, really helped bring young audiences back to Broadway, which had really not been a thing for a very, very long time. But it was a show geared towards teenagers. It seemed to land really well with teenagers. And I mean, considering it opened in 2016 and is still coming back in 2021 as like the heavyweight, like one of the heavyweights. I think that is super impressive.
I mean, you got Come From Away too.
I mean, we also have Come From Away, which is better in every possible notion. But I think
Freestyle Love Supreme.
We can't properly discuss Dear Evan Hansen without discussing the fact that it's like it's geared towards a younger audience. So I'm mostly interested to hear what you guys have to say. But also I would like to connect it all back to that. And I'm curious.
Right.
I'm curious what the show has actually done and what it actually means to the teen audience that it's directed towards. And so with that, you may start the roast of Dear.
Well, I was going to say that it's really interesting because I was looking at some old like news footage from 2016 and how they were talking about how Broadway was seeing the most ticket sales it had seen in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking, it was the post Tony show. So they were talking about how there was no clear real front runner. And then Dear Evan Hansen just kind of swept in there and got it out. But you also have to remember that Dear Evan Hansen in the timeline of this Renaissance, it comes right after Hamilton. So you yes. had that sort of, you had that entry of, okay, cool. Maybe Broadway can be kind of cool. And so Hamilton was really big for taking Broadway and helping it make those steps forward. And then I think Dear Evan Hansen, for all the shit that we give it, I think it was really the one that helped cement it. Because in this interview that I was watching, they were talking about Hamilton of saying, is Hamilton still like going? Is it still going strong?
Yes, it's still going strong because I'm visiting New York right. in the fall. And I was like, oh, maybe I can finally afford Hamilton tickets. Nope, still $500. They're available. I guess that's the difference. But they're still $500. So
that's just nuts.
I think every 10 years we have the big kid musical that draws in kids. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that there is that one every 10 or so years that's aimed at young people that really hits with them and it brings them in. Before this, we had Spring Awakening.
I was about to say, don't tell me that Spring Awakening was the precursor to Dear Evan Hansen. How dare you compare those two musicals?
It is. It is. I am so sorry, but it is. I think Spring Awakening handles a lot of the same edgy topics that Dear Evan Hansen is trying to tackle, but it has an overall message that I think is overall good for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dear Evan Hansen tackles a lot of these topics, and I think the message it gives to children is actually very dangerous, very harmful, and not all that good. However, with that caveat, I don't think a lot of the kids that caught on with Dear Evan Hansen really knew what the plot was about. I think they latched onto that album, imprinted their own plot onto it, and then just kind of left it as that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of kids that would love that cast album, and it is a great album, having no idea what the plot is, then see the show and be angry. I had that happen at least 3 or 4 times with like people I knew.
Yes, my experience with Dear Evan Hansen is that I've listened to most of the songs in the soundtrack many times. And like as a reformed teenager, right? When I was a teenager, I was too cool to be a teenager. So it's like I latch onto these things that are youthful sometimes. And I'm like, oh, my God, it me. The cast album is really good and very emotional. And then you read the plot on Wikipedia and it's like, oh, what the fuck? Like, I think the story that they're trying to tell in the songs versus the story that's actually told on stage are just two totally different things. But like, Jess, what do you see as the message of the show? Like, what is the bad, misleading message of Dear Evan Hansen?
The misleading message basically is about no one really cares about who you are, and it doesn't matter what actions you take to try to better yourself, because everyone will forgive you and there will be no consequences. I think the fact that there are no consequences for Evan's actions in any meaningful way undermines every single bit of messaging that this is trying to tell. And this is from the 13 Reasons Why Day, where that just glorified suicide to a point where a lot of people committed suicide. Right. Whereas this is like, oh, if you kill yourself, people might like a version of you that they might think is better because you're dead. And the fact that this never tries to humanize Connor, they never give justice for Connor, and they never represent Connor as an active human being outside of the ghostly figure that Evan has created in his own mind. Aside from, like, the 10 minutes maybe at the beginning of the story, that disgusts me. And the fact is, there is never any point where they do kind of reconcile that. Because I feel like at one point there was that, and then they wanted to focus more on Ben Platt. The Ben Platt of it all. If you listen to the demos, you can tell that this was a much more nuanced version Once Upon a Time. The You Will Be Found originally was a song called A Part of Me, which was much more about, like, Evan coming to terms with the fact that he didn't know who Connor was and trying to be vague about it, instead of like this fucking disgusting like political message it has become with You Will Be Found. But the fact is, Connor wasn't found, and you could see it as like a Don't Cry For Me Argentina political message that you're supposed to be disgusted by, but you also have it as a hashtag on your goddamn poster.
Right.
So that is the side of it that is really insidious. Have either of you seen the film World's Greatest Dad?
No.
No.
It has a very similar premise to Dear Evan Hansen. Robin Williams is in it, Bobcat Goldthwait, great film. But it's about Robin Williams, whose son is this really arrogant, horrible, mean child who accidentally kills himself through autoerotic asphyxiation. He comes upon his son, and to save him the embarrassment of having like that be the memory of his son, he writes a fake suicide note and says he killed himself. Mm. And from that, you get like the sympathy, and it's the same progression as Dear Evan Hansen, mm-hmm. and the lies upon lies. But the initial reason for telling the lie was a pure thing that was good, so you kind of can follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about Dear Evan Hansen and Evan Hansen's actions about this comes from a pure place. It comes from both, like, I'm trying to ingratiate myself with this family, or I'm nervous, but if you're nervous, you wouldn't be able to lie that well. I'm sorry.
Right.
And then you've got the people that are like, well, this is a coded autistic character, so that justifies his actions, which is a disgusting view.
Right.
Having autism, it is not in the text of the show. That could be a performative tick that mm-hmm. you brought in. It is not text, so you can't, it's not really representation. And even if it was, and they're using that as an excuse for his behavior, I don't know. I feel like having autism is just a thing that you have, and they're wonderful. It is not a reason to be a liar.
Right. So going off of, you brought up an interesting point about, does Evan Hansen make his decisions? Like, do they come from a pure place?
No.
And see, I would counter you on that one, because I think at the beginning, it does come from somewhat of a pure place. Like, I'm not going to say that Evan Hansen is like a great character, because I don't think he is, and I don't think he's meant to be. But I would see it as like when Connor's parents bring it up, at first he does try to say, like, that's not the letter. Like, I wrote that, like, that, like, he didn't write that letter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they just keep going and they keep bringing it up. And so then I see it as Evan is like, oh, okay, I don't want to hurt these parents' feelings, who's just, they lost their child.
So really, the bad guys were the adults all along.
That's victim blaming, and I don't like that at all.
I don't know, though, because the parents really do, like, project a lot onto Evan that he feels like he needs to keep building up on the lie, and then
Evan
that
shouldn't have gone to that dinner to begin with.
Oh yeah, it just becomes worse when Evan starts realizing that he's getting that validation for it, and that's where it starts to get really bad.
Yeah, it's just like, even just watching the movie trailer, they seem to give away a lot of the plot, and it's kind of just like, this is such a tangled web of lies that becomes so much more tangled, that there were so many opportunities so many opportunities to get himself out of that he just didn't. But Brendan, I feel like you kind of see it like as that our main character Deer is meant to be a symbol for what not to do. You think that he's supposed to represent that? right?
That's how I always watched it, was like, don't do this shit. Because
but the thing is, it's, if you're going like drug PSA, kids don't do this, there needs to be repercussions and consequences, which there are not.
Right. And that's what I'm hoping they're going to fix in the movie, is that there are more consequences for the end. Because it kind of just, like, it skips from, if I remember this right, it skips from, he reveals that he, like, told the lie. Mm-hmm. Connor's parents and Zoe are like, fuck you, dude. And then he goes home. His mom's like, I still love you. And then they're in an apple field and he's fine. And it's like no,
he's not just fine, but Zoe comes up to him and is like, you made my family better, thank you, Evan
right.
Hansen.
Like, that's yeah. not good. Like, that's just no. Because here's the thing of, like, at my high school, it was a very small high school. It was probably 400 people, and sadly we had, like, in the 4 years that I was there, and then also a couple years after, like, it was just a small town, so it was a really tight-knit community. But we had, like, sadly, friends of mine and students who died. And it was always interesting to see, especially as, like, we were getting more access to social media and more access to these platforms, it would be interesting to see that same dynamic of, there was one of my friends in particular who, like, nobody would talk to him. And he was kind of that loner.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some health problems. And then one day the health problems just took over and he passed away. And it was interesting to see, like, I never claimed that I was, like, his best friend or anything, but it was just like, you know, it's one of those faces that you pass in the hallway and you're like, hey, how's it going? And
yeah.
we'd stop and we'd talk every so often. But then you'd have people who just never talked to him, who would, almost like they do in Dear Evan Hansen, where they just paint this image of them as somebody that they want to imagine them as. Mm-hmm. And then it's like these people who would never talk to him, they get that validation of, like, oh, look at me, I'm so caring. Like, I was their best friend. Like, this is what they would have wanted. Let's yeah. do this. Let's do that. And so it was that thing of, I think that's where Dear Evan Hansen hits it on the head, is that really is sadly how it goes. And then, like, sadly, weeks pass, months pass, and then people stop talking about it. And it's only the ones who still bring it up that were the ones who genuinely care.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that, but I think Evan Hansen does it much better with the character of Alana, who just kind of inserts herself in there,
exactly.
claiming to have this closeness. I think that's where it nails it, but Evan Hansen is this strange catalyst of a non-existent figure.
Right, and it's just circumstances that are, like, so blown up. But I know
yes.
that, I think it was Pasek from Pasek and Paul, because this is based off of a similar experience that he had
mm-hmm.
in his school. So maybe he was Evan Hansen. Maybe this is just his, that's not canon, but this is
I mean,
projecting.
Who knows? Who knows if it will become canon or what the situation is there? But now that's interesting too, because
right.
I guess the musical came from a personal place, but it's hard to turn those personal stories into, like, a bankable Broadway musical, which is kind of the other thing. I mean, we sort of talked about this with Hadestown, that it's like, what's the, like, where's that mix between art and commerce, right? And Jess, you were saying
right.
that the original album mm-hmm. versus what it is now is just totally different. So it's like, is the story the way that it is because this is what was going to work on Broadway? Because it's just like, it feels like such a flawed story. Like, if you look at the basic aspects of it, it's like, okay, this kid lies throughout the whole thing, and then he has no consequences. So it's like, on the, like, just looking at, like, the basic plot, like, it is that's what the kids would call a problematic at best.
Let me say, the thing that bothers me the most about Evan Hansen outside of the story is the framing. If they had framed this as, like, this dark satire, kind of more in the line of something more aimed for adults about teenagers,
mm-hmm.
I think I'd appreciate it a lot more for what it's trying to say about social media and relationships and all of that. But the fact is, this is marketed to children. There was a young adult novel written for
mm-hmm.
children. This is a musical made for children where it's spitting all these things. And you can say, oh, it's just satire. Well, it stops being satire once you start pushing it towards kids. Right. And then that's what you got, this 13 Reasons Why issue where people started killing themselves.
Right. I've definitely never known Dear Evan Hansen to be satire, and I've definitely listened to the album and thought, like, oh, this is, it's for teens, and I've sent certain songs to people who have sent it to their teen nieces of, like, hey, you're going through something, and here's this song that I think you would relate to. Like, it's very, very much geared towards that audience. I mean, even from, what, 5 years ago? Like, the experience I had listening to this album when I was younger versus now is very different. It's very, very much geared towards that audience. And right. I think, yeah. Ugh.
Right.
And we're talking about all these things in the show, but we're not even mentioning the legit sexual assault that happens in the midway through Act One.
Oh, is there sexual assault in this show?
Evan kisses Zoe without her consent.
Let me.
Right.
He kisses Zoe without her consent.
Yeah, and she kicks him out of the house, and then by the end of Act One, she's like, "Oh, I love you now because you made me feel closer to my brother."
On her dead brother's bed. Yep. Like, what the fuck?
It's a disgusting scene. And then he still gets the girl by the end of Act One.
And I think that ties into like the bigger problem of. It's kind of what we've been talking about, where if you're listening to the songs or you're looking at Dear Evan Hansen. If you're looking at Evan Hansen just as, like, a symbol alone, like, I can totally see how it would be a symbol if you haven't seen the show. But once you place it in the context of the show, then it becomes a problem.
Icky.
Right.
Ooh, that makes me super...
Because I could totally see it as, like, oh, this is Evan. Like, I've never seen the show, but I guess that he, like, deals with being an outsider and having, like, social anxiety and being isolated. And I identify with that. And I want to be like Evan Hansen. But then you might watch the show and then it's like, oh, that's different.
And I get that defensiveness from kids that likely love the album that are like, I have this personal connection to this. How can you attack this? And I'm like, have you seen the show, though? Right. Have you read what happens? Do you have the full context?
And so then it's the question, like, that context is the key, because I mean, I love the song Waiting for a Window. Waiting for a window. It's like Amazon Prime Day.
The delivery guy said he would be here between 3 p.m. and 8 p.m.
And it's Andy Carl in his UPS outfit.
Knocking on the door. I'm waiting for a window. Whoa.
Why can't I not see?
Is there not a window staring back at me?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
But anyway, I love the song Waving Through a Window because through high school, I felt alone and I felt that same way. And so it was that thing of I connect deeply to that song because it touches on something that I experienced that happily I was able to get myself out of.
I agree. That song, I also, when I first heard that song, would listen to it all of the freaking time.
Right.
Because I related to it very, very strongly. And I was like, this song gets me. And like, I think it legitimately helped me through a very difficult period of my life.
But guys, do you get it? The window is social media. And it's the window is his phone.
Well, now I get it. But I think that's it. I think the story told in the music versus the story actually told on stage is just so different. It's just so...
And I think that's the problem of why people are thinking that it's a show that deals with homosexuality and becoming confident with who you are, too. Mm-hmm. It's because if you're listening to For Forever, you can honestly get that without watching the show.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten, I had a whole narrative in my head of what I thought the show was just from listening to the mm-hmm. album, and it's just such a different ride versus the actual.
A bunch of people wrote a better musical while listening to this album.
A bunch of people crafted a narrative. Actually, that would be a really fun crowdsource project. Like, listen to this cast album and, like, write me a 3-paragraph synopsis of what you think this musical is. Actually, that would be a really fun project to work on.
We could just make a, we could make it like we could go into the backstory on Connor Murphy and we can just call it Sincerely Connor Murphy.
I thought the show was about him, like, in way more. I thought way more of the songs were sung by him. I was like, I don't know. I thought there was a time travel element. I'm like, what happens in this musical?
Wouldn't they go back great? And they get the Tesseract and then, you know.
Yeah, I thought Connor got the Tesseract and then it was hidden in the baseball glove. Is that not what happened?
Samuel L. Jackson shows up and he's like, I'm here to talk to you about the Connor Murphy Initiative.
Exactly. Yo, shaving cream on the glove for a week.
What if that's what we were... You know,
that's a song that I forget is in this musical every time I watch it that I'm like, fuck this song.
That's the song I listen to, and it's like, hey, Brendan, guess what? You don't have a dad either.
I'm going to make this joke 5 minutes late. Jess, you were like, oh, have you guys seen this movie? What was it called?
World's Greatest Dad.
I was like, Brendan and I don't have relationships with our father, so we don't relate to the title of that movie.
Yeah. Why would I watch that?
Happy Father's Day, fatherless.
Oh my god, it's Father's Day. We're recording on Father's Day. Wow.
Can I be your guys' dad? I would love to have 2 children like you, please. Can
don't
I please
lie to me. I mean, we could start this paperwork.
Jess, you can definitely Brendan. Be our dad. It's okay, I'll sign the paperwork. Yeah. Can you send
I
me?
Am technically older than Brendan, so I could be your dad.
Ooh. I mean, I don't... why are we waiting?
My children.
We've got to build a wall. This isn't what I wanted as a dad at all.
I guess the next thing... I mean, last week we talked about In the Heights, which was delightful. And so we kind of touched in on this. I'm also worried about the film adaptation of Dear Evan Hansen because it just looks so
bad.
I'm going to use the word melodramatic. I'm not going to use the word bad.
I am.
Because it just looks like it's going to be like a drawn out, like, and I get it. It's about, I mean, it's really not, but it's supposed to be a story about someone who kills themselves. So it, you know, can't be smiles and cheery salsa dancing in the swimming pool. I get it. But it's just like musical theater has this representation of being like, too much, and I just think a big budget movie like this being marketed to like the general audience is just I don't know that I want Dear Evan Hansen to be the figurehead for what musicals are and for what Broadway is, because it's just like, there's just a bunch of kids whining about their feelings. That's all theater is anyways. Let's move on and make another big budget action.
I'm more worried that's what they think that children are like. Like, the kids are smart. They are very, very smart. Mm-hmm. They are not these dumb... It feels like a musical aimed at dumb kids, as bad as that sounds. But kids are very, very smart. They're able to catch on to bullshit, and they're going to feel pandered to by this movie. I feel it already.
Yeah, that's what I felt watching through the trailer, too. It's like I talked about last week, where it feels like... It feels like one of those early 2000, like mid-2000s rom-coms, like teen rom-coms, where it's just over. It's like a Paper Towns.
A friend of mine summed up the look of this movie in a way that I think is just perfect. It looks like an SNL digital short.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and after hearing that, I could not unsee it. That's what it looks like.
What was the other friend who said that they thought this was based in a community college?
That was my girlfriend.
Was it?
Yeah. She was like, is this about a community college?
Because no one's in high school and they actually have people who are young enough to be cast as high schoolers in movies now, and that's crazy. Let's talk about that.
The thing is,
who wants to talk about
Dever
casting?
Oh, I mean, Caitlin Dever, come on. We could have found a much better Zoe. And the guy that played Connor, that it just isn't right. He has no personality to him. And those are my only casting notes.
Okay, Brendan, you're next.
You know, I'm, yeah, we'll see where it goes. We'll see what happens. It's better casting than 2019's Cats. I'll give it that.
Is it, though?
Yeah. I would have liked to see Rebel Wilson as Evan Hansen.
You see, I'm glad James Corden isn't there, but for his role, he was casted well. Like, cast well.
In Cats?
No, in Evan Hansen. In Dear Evan Hansen. He has a cameo in Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? As Buster Jones.
As Buster Jones.
He just like, I'm Mustafa Jones, and I'm not skin and bones. It's Connor's funeral. In fact, I'm impeccably fat.
And then the Broadway stars from the Prom movie musical come in and insert themselves into this narrative also and are like, this is important, suicide awareness, and James Corden is back, yo.
Whoa,
but this is not about me, it's about Dear Connor.
It's about Dear Connor, or who is this musical actually about? It's not super clear.
Yeah, Ben Platt is miscast and was only put in due to nepotism because his dad's producing it. I feel like we've all talked about that to death.
Yeah.
That's fair. We don't have to talk it to death.
I just think if they would have kept his hairstyle the same, I would have been a little bit more forgiving.
I feel like the thing he described, he's like, I lost a ton of weight. I like wore these like binding shirts. I shaved my head and got the hairstyle. And I'm like, motherfucker, you should have stayed chunky and kept your baby fat. You would have looked younger. The fact that you lost weight looks like you've been like periodically smoking cigarettes when you're not in school.
I also loved that Ben Platt's response was, go watch Grease. As if that's like a good argument for like... adults playing teenagers in movies, because you go back and you watch Grease and those guys look like they're like 45.
Wow, my favorite movie musical, Grease,
what the golden standard to compare all movie musicals again. I want the highly problematic change yourself for a man narrative of Grease. Yeah.
Will we ever top Grease as far as musical movies go?
Well, I think it's too, I'm glad that you acknowledged, Jess, that teenagers are not dumb people, because as a teenager I also always really fucking hated Grease. It's like people like teenagers aren't dumb, they're very intelligent and they have their own worldviews. Yeah. And it's like I can understand that the narrative that I'm being told was crafted by adults who thought this is what I wanted and it's not at all what I'm interested in. Please go away.
Can we take a quick cul-de-sac into, like, I'm real sick of millennials shitting on the young people just because they're young. You're acting just like the boomers. I love kids. I learned so much from the kids. Give me more. Like, I love hearing what they've got to say and their point of view on things. And they're much smarter than I was at that age.
So that was the oldest sounding sentence I've ever heard in my life.
Hey, I love our fellow dad. Kids. You better respect
yeah,
him.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Oh my God.
It's Father's Day. Where's my gift, bitch?
I love the youths. They're so great.
I'm not even trying to be like I know them or I am a part of them, because I know for a fact I'm not. But I love hearing what they have to say and what they do and their point of view on things. It is much more interesting than the same old millennial point of view of like, what house am I part of? Hogwarts? No, fuck you people. Stop. You had your time on the internet. Let the youngs be cool for a bit and let them have their hyperfixations and all that. It's time for us to step back, watch, and learn, as opposed to like, I'm still involved.
Right. It's a nice thing if we're heading in the right direction, which is good.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, stop making fun of the pronouns. Stop all that. They're so much smarter and they're way more headed than us. And I'm sorry we're not the progressive ones anymore. Cry more.
But it's good because the next wave is even more progressive, which is which is great. It's like pick up the mantle.
Then if it isn't, so if Dear Evan Hansen wasn't the Broadway show of, you know, this decade that properly appealed to young people, which one was?
Hadestown, probably,
yeah. Or like, Come From Away.
It's a story that's not, like, Hadestown is a love story, not targeted towards teens, but it's, like, a true, honest, not honest, I mean, it's, like, it's a very emotional piece of theater, like we've discussed.
It's mature.
Again.
It's, like, it's the thing of, it's a fairy tale, like, it's based off of those Greek myths, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's that star-crossed lovers, and it's that cliched thing of, oh, we're meant to be together. Like, it's meant to be true love.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it in a way that's believable and that's human.
Right.
And that it's, like, it rolls
and
out
stylized.
Authentically. Yeah.
It's not just pandering towards the youths.
Right.
But then again, I do want to spend an asterisk on the show that the youths pushed to Broadway that wouldn't have, which is Be More Chill. If not for the kids really backing that show and really posting about it and getting the attention on their Tumblrs and all that, as you should, but there was a lot of people using their fan art as a way to promote that, and that eventually catapulted that from like that New York stage that just had a quick cast recording recorded the day after closing to an actual Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
right.
Yeah, it wasn't like the biggest groundbreaking thing, but that's not nothing.
Right. It's
right.
The same thing that saved Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That kind of saved Beetlejuice.
Kind of saved it. Just a little bit too late. Just a little too late that they found TikTok. If they would have found TikTok a little bit sooner, they would have had it.
But where is Sophia and Caruso's vape?
God, where is it? It's my favorite backstage myth, is that she got fired because Alex Brightman saw her vaping. My favorite myth. Sophia, stop vaping! Sophia, stop! You have an entrance! But when looking at Dear Evan Hansen 2... it's also worth acknowledging that it was made at a different time before a lot of this, like, before we really, I think for myself anyway, before we really became, like, politically aware of things. That's how I feel.
Like, 2016
that
was like,
Okay.
Like, because that's before things got, like, really bad. Because who got elected in 2016 and was like,
do you guys
wow.
remember who hosted the 2016 Tonys?
And who, that, yeah.
Yes. It was 2017 Tonys, but yes, I remember.
Right.
Yeah, it's the last time I watched the Tonys too, and I'm just like, oh, that's.
Because a lot of stuff came after Dear Evan Hansen that completely changed the.
So Dear Evan Hansen ruined America.
Pretty much. That's the conclusion. Dear Evan Hansen ruined America. Yes.
And roll the credits.
In the universe where Great Comet won, Trump lost. We have President Clinton entering her second term right now.
I like thinking about it. Is that the butterfly effect of the effects of the last 5 years were actually just who won the Tony for?
It was
because
of Natasha Pierre. Yeah.
And it's like it's that big brain meme. It's just like if Great Comet won the 2017 Tonys,
right.
Where would we be today?
Someone
because
go
that's
make
also
a, meme.
A show that debatably got snubbed, not debatably, that I think everybody agrees, like,
oh my God, it
ended
got snubbed so
way
hard.
Before its time. And it's just disappointing that it's like that one didn't.
Yes.
That one didn't live
out.
But
there's also the racial element that kind of caused its closure.
Yeah.
Which
that
is
was a
not,
big
unmotivated, and it that director, as talented and wonderful she is, there is a pattern developing with her, and that issues have been brought up into her other shows as well, where yeah, there's a series of bad looks there as too.
I know so little about any of this. I don't know anything about 1812.
Like what? Yeah. Dive deeper into that.
A couple of her former crewmates have said racism against her. Like, there is, of course, that Oak situation with Mandy Patinkin, which is... That was a weird situation to begin with. But then apparently one of the people on Hadestown said that they were fired just for being black, and they were a costume designer, and they called out Rachel Chavkin personally, and she issued an apology. I remember this. It was a really weird situation. And they brought up in there that that was also a race-related issue with her and brought up the Oak situation.
Huh.
And I'm like, oh.
That's really interesting. Because I haven't seen, I don't know, maybe it's just because I haven't dived deeper into it, and I could be completely off base on this, but I don't know, I always thought, like, Chavkin was more of the, like ran with the diversity, and that was one of the big things.
I agree with that, I really do, but I have seen it brought up by people that have collaborated of color, and it has been brought up more than once.
Right. So it's the question of, is it deliberate? Or is
I don't
it
think
just,
it's deliberate,
like,
but
that's the big
a look.
Right.
Yeah,
and
even
I think
if it's not
thing
deliberate,
like,
if it's still harmful,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
still worth addressing and fixing.
But, right.
Yes.
And that's good that she apologized for it and, like, moves forward. Because it could be, like, you could take the approach of, like, I can only imagine what Scott Rudin would have said. Like, he probably would have just...
Scott Rudin wouldn't have said anything. He would have just stepped down.
Because I could see it as Rudin would have, like, doubled down and said, this isn't a problem. You're the problem for thinking it was a problem.
Yeah. And I will say that she did not say that. Have you guys ever read Heath Saunders' open letter about representation in Broadway?
No.
He was a part of Great Comet and all that. It's a great, great essay, highly recommended, mm-hmm. where he just feels like a lot of black bodies are being used to fulfill, basically going in white face and pretending to be these, stepping into white roles when there aren't any people of color roles being written for people of color mm-hmm. by people of color. Mm-hmm. And the notable exceptions were Strange Loop and Slave Play and all those. And I noticed that despite him being in Great Comet, that was not one of the things listed. Which, that is an issue.
Mm-hmm. No, we started talking about it a little bit last week within the Heights, and I think it was really before there was a lot of criticism posted online about the lack of Afro-Latin representation in that movie, which is valid. Like, I'm never going to tell people who say I don't feel represented in a movie that they're wrong.
I have my own opinions about that situation, which is wholly different. I guess I can spit that out of here because there's too much exposition already.
Yep.
But I do find it suspect that, let's say, when Andrew Lloyd Webber produced Cats, no one came for blood at him for the casting decisions of James right. Corden, Rebel Wilson, and all that. They all came for Tom Hooper. Or for when the Les Mis movie came out and Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman were willfully mm-hmm. miscast and not the correct representation there. They come for Tom Hooper. But when we do In the Heights, we don't go after the director there. We go after mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda because he's the successful one. He's the rich one. It was a weird look for me. I didn't quite understand that one.
No. Well, I think it's the same. I think it's just the problem of if you think, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda is deliberately racist, like, how can you think that?
What world do you think of where the producer has casting decisions?
That too.
Right.
And it's also just the problem of, like, again, coming as, you know, white male, what do I know? I see it as, like, this was Lin-Manuel Miranda's story of when he was growing up in the Heights, too. And I don't, I don't know, it wasn't on purpose, is the big thing. And I think that when it came to apologies, I think that Lin probably gave one of the best apologies that you could for that situation, where he
said... The question is, why was it him apologizing when it wasn't him that directed the film? It should have been the director, the writer, and everyone coming together to sign that apology themselves. He fell on that sword for no reason, and that's what kind of bothers me about that.
Right, but I think, like, kind of what Brendan just said, it's like it wasn't deliberate, but if people still took issue with it, I think that their criticisms and their sadness is totally valid. But, like, in talking
it's
about
totally
the
valid.
Heights, I mean, the thing that it did versus what we were talking about before is that it was telling Latino stories, but written by Latino people, which is what is not happening on Broadway, right? It's like stories written by, produced by white people, and it's like, oh, but we cast some black actors, and so that's representation, and this is why I started crying. This is the exact conversation we had last week. That's why I started crying, Brendan. because it's just like, you can't put people of color, like, I'm so glad that Hamilton was revolutionary in colorblind casting, and that in the years since, like, we've come to be like, that is nowhere near enough. Like, it was so important to have that step, but we have so much further that we need to go for the actual bits of representation, and I don't know. Dear Evan Hansen is just a story by white people for white people, so
yeah. Right.
Very representative of Broadway and in all of its finest.
The way of the broads.
Any closing thoughts on Dear Evan Hansen?
I can't wait to do our review episode on the movie.
Oh, I was like, when does the movie come out? How many months before I have to talk about Dear Evan Hansen?
Like, it's 3 months.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time, plenty of new release trailers.
I don't hate this musical. I mean, I've never seen it live, obviously. I have no intention of seeing it live. I think that the message it presents is vaguely problematic. I think if you're a teenager and you get something out of the show, that's great. But I also think we could do a much better job of telling a story of suicide on stage that's not this.
But no matter how we cut it, it played an important role in being that gateway drug show for a lot of kids who wanted to get into musicals. Because I know a lot of people who it's like, Dear Evan Hansen, then they went on to Be More Chill or other shows like that. So it started the snowball.
And then there's shows like Beetlejuice and Mean Girls, my personal favorites. I know Jess doesn't like Mean Girls, and I love it. So we can talk about that another time.
You're allowed to like Mean Girls. It's perfectly fine. I just want to say, just because I don't like something and I have opinions, yeah, feel free to like it. It's all good. If it brings you joy, that brings me joy.
Did everyone hear that? He gave me permission to like what I want to like. Thanks so much, Jess.
I didn't give you permission. I gave the audience permission.
Okay. Yeah, you're not allowed to like it.
You're my child. I have to tell you what to like.
Okay, audience, Daddy Jess says that it's okay for you to like what you want to like. Just make sure you run it by him first so he knows.
You gotta run it by me. I gotta give him the approval.
If you want to like Dear Evan Hansen or Mean Girls, you can tweet at, what's your Twitter handle?
Jesse D. McAnally, because I tweeted too much about Jagged Little Pill and lost my old Twitter.
No, the way they handled it was disgusting. That's the biggest issue yet. It was shitty in the first place, and then they just doubled down on their shittiness. It's like, fuck you guys, that's not how we do this.
Yeah. And that's coming up on this season of Too Much Exposition.
Exactly. I will say there, I have my one joke about Jagged Little Pill, because that shit went down the same week that Elliot Page came out as trans. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, at least Juno is a Diablo Cody written thing with a trans actor in it, finally.
To close out our episode, we want to start a segment where we focus on smaller regional theaters around the country and maybe around the world. Because I think Brendan and I really like to bash Broadway for not being good enough. But in order to properly do that, I would rather discuss other theaters that are doing a better job than Broadway, or just other theaters in general, because so much theater is produced in America that never makes it to a Broadway stage that is important and valuable and inaccessible because it exists only in one place and to the people who live in that town. And so today, Jess gave us two theaters actually to talk about. What would you like to intro?
The first one I want to talk about is the Detroit Public Theater, which is local in my area, one of the best like public theater, and they do like a variety of different things. They do like jazz, they do plays, and it was also one of the last things I went to before COVID was their production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch that performed at the other theater I'm going to recommend, the Planet Ant Theater, which is a much more kind of edgy, kind of cool college black box theater where they put on like these incredible plays and musicals that are like so out of left field of what you would expect from like Detroit. Two wonderful theater companies producing incredible work. I can't wait to get back out there now that COVID is hopefully in the past rear view.
Yeah, how are things for you guys? I mean, in California here, we're doing some theater outside in the summer, like very little, but we're doing some theater, and it seems to be back in full swing in the fall.
I have a lot of friends currently starring in a lot of plays and getting invited, but they're all outdoors. So I'm hopefully going to go see an outdoor production of Spelling Bee at the end of next month, and another production of Something Rotten Outdoors, where one of my good friends, Perry Devin Corker Jr., is playing William Shakespeare.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
He was in like one of my first short films, and now I get to see him as Shakespeare. It's going to be great.
That's amazing. No, these theaters seem super cool. The Detroit Public Theater has a program where they work with incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people to produce Shakespeare shows, and they've kept funding to that through COVID, trying to keep in contact with those people and help them use Shakespeare as a way to communicate and alleviate the stress of this period of time. So I wanted to call them out for that, which is really cool. And the Planet Art Theater seems just like a really dope spot to go watch some comedy or see a show or display your art. Two places I would love
to visit.
It's
like attached to a bar, too. It's like attached to a bar, so you just go in and get your beer, then you go into the black box and you're like half tipsy. And then the person playing Hedwig holds your hand during singing Midnight Radio and you're just too buzzed and you're like, oh, this is amazing.
This is amazing. I will marry you. You want to get out of here?
Okay, can I tell this story before we wrap up? I know we're like, but I go to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch at the Planet Ann Theater through the Detroit Public Theater. And I tend to make direct eye contact with people, and since Hedwig is like a show, a one person show. It happens a lot. And then during Midnight Radio, I'm sitting on the edge of the aisle. He had to reach over an old lady to grab my hand and stare at me for a bit. My girlfriend and her father are on the other side of me. And she just turns to me like, "Did you know him?" I'm like, "I don't think so, but I think I do now."
Now you're connected now.
And then he added me on Facebook and he's like, "Man, I loved your podcast this week."
Oh my God, oh, that's wow. crazy.
Oh wow.
It was incredible.
You had a real celebrity moment while watching that show, is what you said.
I mean, I just thought, hey, there was the eye contact. And then later I was like, oh no, you know me. Okay.
He probably went to the back and he's like, "Oh my God, guys, Jesse from Musicals with Jesus out there. Oh my God, Jesse from Musicals with Jesus out there.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Daddy Jess is out there."
Daddy Jess.
Hashtag Daddy Jess.
Hashtag, that's it. Hashtag Daddy Jess. Hashtag Daddy Jess.
Dear Daddy Jess, we've been way too out of touch.
I like that we both did the musical part and we both did it wrong. That's. I'm just going to leave in that overlapping audio.
Speak
it's
for yourself.
Do not fix any of it. Don't fix any of it.
It might sync up perfect.
It might. We'll find out. Jess, where can the people find you on Twitter so that they can ask for your permission to watch things? And where else can we find you on the internet?
To enjoy things. They don't need my permission to watch.
Oh, okay.
They need my permission to enjoy.
Thank you for
them.
Clarifying. I'm going to watch a movie tonight. If I like it, I'll let you know.
DM me and I'll give you permission.
Oh, okay.
As your father, I must.
Okay, great. This is why I don't have a dad. This sounds horrible.
I don't like this bit.
Yeah, this is what. Actually, all I need to do to be a father presence in your life is to wear my socks all the way up to my knees and chew pretzels really loud. So I feel like I'm already halfway there.
What a specific. What a specific image.
Again, Brennan and I don't relate, so we have no idea if that's
is that
dad
a dad
culture.
Thing? Is that what dads do?
Yeah. I grill a lot, and I swear in very uncomfortable ways that kind of makes the entire family trip. It just ruins the family trip. I'm also gonna just bite my thumb so everyone knows that I'm angry.
Can you hit on all the waitresses at all the restaurants that you stop at?
No, but I do go into restaurants, and every time I go into a restaurant, I know their name. It's really amazing. It's a trait that all dads have. Mm. But the thing is, their names are always Dollface.
Ah. Well, there's nothing wrong with being friendly.
Oh, God. Oh, lordy. Okay, internet hashtags.
Dads are uncomfortable. Dads are very uncomfortable. In fact, maybe
that's not your Twitter.
Outlaw dads.
Plug your Twitter, man.
Oh yeah, I'm on Twitter at Jesse D McAnally, spelled McAnally, spelled McAnally. We all got it. You can also find my podcast at Musicals with Cheese on all podcasting things on the Broadway Podcast Network alongside Too Much Exposition. That's a pretty good show too. You can also follow us on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals, spelled CHEESEY Musicals, because I wanted the word cheese in there.
Because I wanted the full word cheese, so I spelled it wrong. You can find me on the internet at Gabriella Dazed. Please follow me on Twitter. I have like 30 followers. It's really embarrassing.
Am I
gonna
following
get
you?
That
yeah,
up to 35?
I'm not asking you. I'm asking the people. I have such an embarrassing number of Twitter followers. I need to fix it. Brendan,
what's up?
He's like, "What's up? Where can the people find you on the internet?"
You know, depends on the time of day.
Oh my God.
You can find me at Wait Wings on Twitter. Also, Wait in the Wings on YouTube if you like theater history deep dives. And you can listen to that podcast on the Broadway Podcast Network as well.
Jess, thank you for coming on to our podcast and talking about a show that hate for probably the 10th time. Maybe we'll have you back for
can
the
Can you all
movie.
Talk about something that we like about, please?
Oh, let's end.
I love a lot of musicals, guys.
We want to end on a positive. Let's end on a positive. I love Spring Awakening. It's the best musical ever. And the Deaf West revival was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Who's next? Just kidding. Paula Vogel's Indecent is the most beautiful piece of theater that I've ever seen in my life. But Spring Awakening is very near and dear to
really me. Close. Jesse, what's your favorite show?
Brendan, I asked you first.
My favorite show is Fame.
You piece of shit.
And on that note... we'll see you next week.
No, no, you bastard. Let me say something positive.
Just end it there. Just end it there. Cliffhanger. End it there. Oh, cliffhanger.
Let him speak.
No. I'm going to recommend two Broadway E things to you guys, just things you might not know about. First one, if you guys have not listened to In Constant Search of the Right Kind of Attention by Laura Benanti, it's one of the best, like, one of those artists doing a vanity album ever. It's like one of the greatest things I've ever listened to. If you're having a long car ride, it'll make it go by faster. And also, I highly recommend Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, Grace Aki's podcast. Give it a listen. Very great. Her most recent episode is probably one of the most harrowing things I've ever listened to. Broke my heart to shreds. You guys should listen to that. And that's it. I just wanted to recommend two things from people I love.
We'll see you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.